Good afternoon. You're listening to Louisiana Considered, a new daily show about South Louisiana from WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Karen Henderson. We'll be covering top stories and bringing you lively conversations with the region's journalists, newsmakers, and artists. And we'll be coming to you live Monday through Friday, every day at noon. It's Mardi Gras, a fat Tuesday like none in recent memory. Instead of parades, floats, and throws, we have freezing temperatures, ice, and an ongoing pandemic. COVID-19 has forced the cancellations of carnival celebrations across the state. Later in the show, we'll visit one community where the tradition rides on, and we'll have a discussion about the history of Mardi Gras. But first, how's Louisiana faring after one of the coldest nights in state history? Barry Keim is our state climatologist. He joins me now. Hello, Barry. I believe we have Barry. And there we go. Hello, Barry. We do have you there. Yes. All right.
Good morning, Karen. Good talking to you.
You know, I was just saying, like, this is a Mardi Gras. Like, I can't, you know, is this the coldest Mardi Gras that we've ever had?
Not quite the coldest, although it is pretty miserable out there. This morning, we got down to 26 degrees in New Orleans, got down to 20 in Baton Rouge. It was 3 degrees in Shreveport this morning. It's pretty crazy. And just, you know, current temperatures are, it's 12 in Shreveport, 23 right now here in Baton Rouge, and 28 in New Orleans. So it's bitterly cold out there. However, the, the 26 degrees in New Orleans, not the coldest Mardi Gras ever. The coldest Mardi Gras ever actually was in February, on February 14th, 1899. It got down to 22 degrees. So we're not too far off that mark.
All right. This is still pretty unusual for us here in Louisiana. I mean, we're hearing reports of dangerous cold, reports of limbs breaking, trees toppling, wind chills that could cause hypothermia and frostbite. We don't hear that a lot here in the South.
No. And the biggest problem we have here, obviously, is the lack of power in these frigid temperatures. So, I know Entergy and these other companies have a lot on their plate, but that's obviously a top priority to try to get that restored as quickly as possible.
What areas of the state were the hardest hit?
Really, the New Orleans area was probably the lightest hit. But once you get outside of that extreme southeastern part of the state, the carnage was pretty high, pretty much statewide. It's pretty amazing. Not the worst ice storm I've ever seen. I've seen something even worse, where we had like 6 inches of ice accumulation up in New England in a storm back in 1998. But still, this was a nuisance, and this has been widespread, and we're affecting areas. From Texas, and this is going to go all the way up into New England. So the impacts of this storm are going to reach far and wide.
What warnings and or advisories are still in effect?
For one thing, we have another rainstorm coming in tomorrow. It's going to pretty much affect the whole state. Fortunately, in the southern half of the state, the temperatures will be above freezing, so we won't have to cope with more freezing rain. But the northern half of the state are looking at probably another repeat of what we just went through. So not good news for North Louisiana.
And when can we expect to get a break from all this cold weather?
Oh, we're going to stay in the deep freeze, unfortunately, for most of this week. In fact, we have minimum temperatures on Friday morning and Saturday morning, 27 degrees here in Baton Rouge, to give you an example. It's just going to stay bitterly cold all the way through the weekend. I think we'll see the first signs of a break probably the latter part of Sunday and into Monday. I think by Monday we actually may see some 50s and 60s for high temperatures, which will be a welcome relief from what we've been experiencing.
Yes, it will. Thank you, Barry.
My pleasure.
Barry Keim, Louisiana State Climatologist. This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Karen Henderson. More than 120,000 Louisianans are still without power just after noon on this Mardi Gras day. Temperatures are, as we heard, expected to drop below freezing again tonight. Entergy spokesperson Brandon Scardigli joins me now to talk about the work that they're doing to try to get their customers' lights back on. Brandon, let's start with the numbers. How many Entergy customers don't have power?
Right now, across the whole state, we're seeing about 75,000 or so that are out, still from that's down from a peak of about 130,000 that we saw late last night.
My goodness. So you guys have been working, but still quite a number of people without power.
We are, and unfortunately with these types of ice events, it's just a much, much slower restoration process than I think what our customers are used to seeing. Usually if you have something like a hurricane that knocks out our substations or our transmission lines, it's easier to get those fixed and get a large chunk of customers back on at once. And that's just not what we're seeing with this ice storm. It's a totally different ball game for us. What we're really seeing is a lot of just vegetation damage. So in an area particularly like Baton Rouge, where you have a whole lot of tree canopy covering those power lines, ice really weighed down those tree branches and those are knocking onto our power line. So it's a lot of our crews just having to go out and take it street by street, line by line, and get those things cleared off so we can get the customers back on.
Anything you can tell those listening now about how long you think it'll take to get everybody back up?
Sure. I know that's always the million-dollar question when you start dealing with storms like this, where we see kind of the mass outages. And fortunately, we do have some answers now. Our assessments are just about complete on the damage process, so we know what we're dealing with. And we are expecting everyone outside of the Metro Baton Rouge area to have their power back on by tonight, with a few of those inside the Metro Baton Rouge area that really was hit the hardest through all of this. Some of those may linger into tomorrow, but we're doing our best to get them back on as quickly and as safely as we possibly can.
You know, I saw a tweet where you were asking customers that do have power to reduce their electricity use. Why is that?
Yeah, so the cold weather, I know we're always used to dealing with heat here in southern Louisiana with air conditions, but heater draws far more power, especially if you have an electric heater. But when you talk about a lot of customers going back out and then getting them back on, you have a lot of people's heaters who are all going to pop on at one time, and that can cause some issues for our power generation grid. We ask people if you can just try to conserve their electricity. When we do get those other customers back on, we don't have any issues down the line.
Now, many customers saw a huge jump in their utility bills in January. I know Entergy pointed to the cold temperatures that we had in December as the cause of that. That is nothing compared to what we're going through right now. Should customers prepare for sticker shock on their March bills?
Sure. Well, we'll have to see what it looks like. I know what we saw in those January bills is customers who actually got billed for that really cold December. I think we had something like double the amount of cold days this December than we did last December, which caused those prices to jump, along with some other factors like natural gas usage. But we'll really just have to see how many cold days we have in a row to see how much energy customers are using before we see those bills.
Brandon, what advice do you have for the folks in the northern part of the state where it's really cold?
Yes, and I know I heard your meteorologist talk about that a few minutes ago. And unfortunately, those guys are going to see some more ice coming through tonight. We were lucky with this first storm. We didn't see nearly the outages that we thought we might see in the northern portion of the state. We're really not facing any outages north of around the Baton Rouge-Hammond area as of now. But those guys have been pretty lucky with that first round, and we just encourage them to please stay safe and be prepared as this next round of ice comes through.
Well, Brandon, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Entergy spokesperson Brandon Scardigli. And you are listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. Again, I'm Karen Henderson. Moving along and just looking at the areas affected by all the ice and the cold, Louisiana State Police is asking drivers to stay off the roads until the icy conditions have passed. Many roadways are still closed. I want to turn now to State Police Trooper Taylor Scrantz. Trooper Scrantz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Karen.
All right, good to have you there. Now, could you run down some of the major road closures that are still causing problems today?
Yeah, I-10 between Baton Rouge and Lafayette, specifically the Chappell Basin, is currently closed right now due to extreme icing on the roadway. I-10 at US 61 eastbound, which is the Gramercy exit, is currently closed due to a vehicle striking the bridge rail, destroyed 30 feet of bridge railing this morning. DOTD is currently repairing that right now. And we're also seeing a lot of closures within our local cities right now due to extreme icing. But the main thing is that we want to urge to our drivers to stay home if you can. And obviously, if you have to get on the road and you're an essential worker, be extremely careful on the roadway, especially when you're going over bridges and overpasses, because they inherently ice first before anything else.
Now, you mentioned an accident, but most of this is caused by what are we icing bridges? Or are we talking some of the trees that we've heard over weight with the ice and toppling?
Yeah, all the specific cases we're working here in Troop A are due to icing situations, vehicle losing control, going off the roadway, striking more times than not the bridge railing on these overpasses.
Now, you mentioned, that there are some people that will have to get out and drive in it. Could you give some further advice? How do you do this safely?
Yes, I mean, use extreme caution. Do not go the speed of the posted speed limit. Obviously, these conditions are not in place for that right now. And if you happen to get on the roadway, bring water and a blanket. Sorry there, I lost you for like water and a blanket. In the event you do get into a crash, a blanket will definitely keep you warm, because although we are coming, it may take a couple hours for us to get there.
All right. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Trooper Scrantz from the Louisiana State Police. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Karen Henderson. West of New Orleans and continuing further west past Baton Rouge, about an hour and a half, you'll find the city of Eunice, where today they are continuing the long tradition of the Courier de Mardi Gras. The Eunice Courier de Mardi Gras dates back to when the town was first established in the late 19th century. Courier in French means to run. During a career, participants on horseback, foot, and trailers go house to house on a run looking for donations of food items to throw into a community gumbo. The run in Eunice is organized by the Eunice Mardi Gras Association. Captain of the Eunice Courier de Mardi Gras, Pat Fry, and Association Secretary Treasurer Amanda Bordelon are my guests today. Welcome, Pat and Amanda. Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Amanda, I want to start with you here at the front, since you handled all the details of organizing this event. It's become quite popular through the years. Some years you've had more than 1,000 people watch and participate. What changes have you had to make this year because of COVID?
We've had to make every change. nothing stayed the same. We had to start with application process. You had to apply and submit a photograph of yourself in your costume. You had to be a fully costumed Mardi Gras with capuchon mask and fringe top and pants.
And you've limited the number of people this year.
Oh, yes, ma'am. We had to limit to 150.
And that's the limit under Governor Edwards' restrictions, a limit of 150
Correct.
People for outdoor events. That's under phase two restrictions. So
right.
you all have figured out a way that this run can go on.
We've tried. Yes, ma'am.
Now, Pat, you're the capitan of the Eunice Courier. This is what year for you?
This is my 30th year in the Eunice Mardi Gras run. I served 12 years as co-captain, and then I moved the remainder of the years as captain.
Well, Pat, do you remember having a run where the weather was this cold?
Oh, yes, ma'am. In 2014, it was cold and ice rain, and we had over 300 runners that year.
Tell us how this thing works.
Well, we gather early in the morning, everyone dressed in costumes so where you can't be seen. We go on horseback, and then we have on trailer and a lot on foot. And we get to a house when I go first on my horse, and I have the white flag and the whistle. You're not allowed on anyone's property until the captain waves in the flag, the Mardi Gras. Well, when I wave them in, they come in and they do a jig and a dance, and they do all kind of crazy things. And
they're pretty much dancing for their dinner. They're dancing to win some kind of ingredient. What ingredients are you looking for?
Well, we're looking for rice. We're looking for chickens. We're looking sometimes they give us sausage, or they give us money, a few nickels here and there, basically things like that.
What's this called, the chicken run? What part of that is in this event?
Well, when we get to the farmhouse, the farmer or the landowner usually has a chicken. He'll offer it to the Mardi Gras, and either he'll give it to the captain to throw off his horse, or he'll throw it out of a barn or out of a tree, or he'll just throw it off the ground. But a lot of times they'll give it to me as the captain, and I'll raise my flag and blow my whistle and offer it to the Mardi Gras, and they gather, and then I'll run wide open and throw it in there, and they go for it.
And whoever catches the chicken, I guess there's bragging rights?
Yes, ma'am. We have an award for the most chicken catches on the run, and that is top dog.
Top dog for the day. Now, once you've gathered,
let's say top chicken, I guess.
Top chicken. Once you've gathered in all these gumbo ingredients, you know, is there a head chef? What do you guys head back? And this is an all-day event. We should mention this doesn't just happen in an hour or two.
No. This starts at 6 o'clock in the morning and it ends at 6 o'clock in the evening. We have our head gumbo chef is Joe Fondo. He's been cooking our gumbo for years. Everything goes in the pot.
This is an unusual year, of course, we all know with COVID, and it's changed so many things. But I know there in Eunice, Pat, you guys are trying to keep this tradition going.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I consider it a very, very good, rich honor to me. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I love it. It's our heritage, and I want to preserve it, and I want to keep it going, and I want to get people in here to keep it going after I'm gone.
Pat Fry is the captain of the Eunice Carrière de Mardi Gras. Amanda Bordelon, secretary treasurer for the Eunice Mardi Gras Association. Thank you both, and bon appetit.
Same to you. You take care.
Au revoir.
This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Karen Henderson. Why do Mardi Gras celebrations look different in the city than they do in the country? Why do some communities have parades and throws while others have horseback rides and chicken runs? For an understanding of these two very different traditions, we turn to Barry Onsalay, a Cajun historian and folklorist and professor emeritus of Francophone Studies at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. Dr. Onsalay, when and where did this celebration of Mardi Gras begin?
What we now know as Mardi Gras was one of a number of changing of the year celebrations. There are others that are similar to what we do at the mass procession, which involves collecting donations from the hosts and some sort of performance in exchange. You think of Halloween or Christmas caroling, mumming, the mumming tradition in Ireland. And Mardi Gras was our version, and it's because many of our ancestors come from France and Spain and some from Germany. And Mardi Gras, the day before Ash Wednesday, was celebrated in those Catholic communities. So when our ancestors came to the New World, they just brought that tradition with them, just as they brought the tradition of celebrating Christmas or Easter or anything else attached to the liturgical calendar.
Why do we see such different celebrations, though, in the city versus rural?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There are two essential models, and I'll come to a third variety if you're interested. But the two essential models are the urban model and the rural model. And the urban model, we got both of those traditions from the way people, our ancestors, used to celebrate. Let's say in France, whether they were from a more urban context or a more rural context. And the urban context has, as we all know, people in masks and costumes on floats, on elaborate floats that go through the streets. And the interesting thing about, one of the interesting differences between the two models is that in the urban model, people witnessing the procession beg from the procession to get beads or
throw me something, mister.
Right. Whereas in the rural model, people on masks and costumes go around the countryside, what they consider to be their neighborhoods, on horseback or in wagons or on foot or some other accommodation. And the difference is that in the rural model, the procession is doing the begging. It's reversed. They're looking for some sort of contribution, as the Eunice captain just explained, a contribution to a communal meal that's eaten later that day. And here in South Louisiana, the most effective communal meal to feed a lot of people, an unanticipated number of people, is a gumbo. It can stretch it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you
so
know,
they're looking for rice or chickens or sausage or onions or anything that'll go in the gumbo. Ideally, though, they're looking for a chicken, and most ideally, the chicken is not just handed over. It's a live chicken, and this is part of what I've come to understand as an important part of the visit. It is that the homeowner is giving something very valuable. Because back in the old days, you know, eggs were used as currency for trading. Chickens were a valuable commodity. We didn't eat fryers back then. We ate old hens that were done laying, which is why they're good in a gumbo. You can cook them a long time and get them tender. But the homeowner is giving something very valuable. And in exchange, what the homeowner and his family members are getting is entertainment.
That's right. We heard they dance.
Lively colors and music and songs and performance and cutting up and acting silly. And one of the most interesting aspects of that hilarity that the visitors, the Mardi Gras are providing is trying to catch a chicken in the open field, which is under the best of circumstances, not easy.
You throw a costume and a mask.
Add to that the mask and the ritual consumption of some inebriating substance, and it can get pretty hilarious. And you have to consider that chickens are being released where they live. They know their way around. They know, and they can run under a barbed wire fence a lot faster than a man can.
I will tell you this, though, Barry, from the Eunice folks, they say chickens don't run as fast in the cold. So it's a little easier today, I think.
Nor do people.
That is true. That is true. You know, quickly, I wanted to ask you, because I know you are an historian and love the culture here. Have you ever through the years seen a Mardi Gras disrupted like we've seen this year with cold and the pandemic?
Yeah, the cold has disrupted some Mardi Gras in the past, although the hardier bunches ran anyway when the temperature was down in the teens, but previously, and some of them are running again today. The COVID challenge is of course in a way more serious. I mean, you don't want to. The whole point of Mardi Gras is to celebrate with your neighbors and friends and loved ones, and the last thing you want to do is inadvertently get everybody sick by creating a spreader event.
And that's why so many parades
some of
were
the
canceled.
Mardi Gras, mm-hmm. One of the Mardi Gras around here has incorporated COVID masks into their required masking strategy this year, and they're carrying 6-foot-long cords to make sure they stay apart. I mean, about how to make this.
I guess you could say, looking at that, Mardi Gras will find a way. We appreciate your time, Dr. Ansale. Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
All right. I think you'll appreciate this. We're going to end our show on Mardi Gras 2021 with this from the Balfour Brothers with La Danse de Mardi Gras. I'd like to thank our guests. This episode of Louisiana Considered will be available on WRKF.org and WWNO.org. On tomorrow's show, host Carl Lingo will have a discussion with Quentin Messer of the New Orleans Business Alliance. Don't miss it. Thanks to engineers Garrett Pittman and Adam Voss and producer Katie Ann McDonald. I'm Karen Henderson.